Wendy Long, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Karen. My pleasure.
I guess the first question I have is, why are you running? We know that you're 40 points in the polls behind Kirsten Gillibrand. She has millions of dollars. I think you've raised about a little over $500,000. It almost seems like a Don Quixote-like quest. You've been diligently going all over the state, slogging through everything. And, you know, you got, it makes you wonder, like, why are you doing this?
Because I believe in the things that I'm campaigning on. I believe very, very strongly that I have the right answers and she has the wrong policies and the wrong record and has really turned her back on New York on the number one issue in this election, which is jobs and the economy. I think that the policies that she's been pursuing and what she offers to continue with are precisely the things that have driven our economy into the ground. And people all over this state are hurting, in the city, upstate, in every corner of the state, because of this bad economy that we're living in, because of the lack of jobs.
Well, we'll get into some specifics in a moment, but briefly, what would you do differently than what she's done?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are basically four pillars of a strong economy, and we're missing all of them. And one of them is we're way overtaxed. New Yorkers are 50th in the nation in terms of the total tax burden, state, local, and federal.
Yeah, according to the Cato Institute that just did a study last week, yes.
And the Tax Foundation, too, says that we have the worst business climate, and most of that is tax here, so that's an independent group. So that's a big part of it, where we're overtaxed, and it's killing businesses and killing jobs. The other part is overregulation, particularly of small business, but big business, too, but mainly small business. The incredible levels of public debt that we have, our $16 trillion national debt and the incredible federal spending monster that just goes on and on, and Senator Gillibrand and her colleagues keep running up our federal credit card and not producing a budget, not balancing a budget, far from it. And then the fourth pillar, I think, of economic strength is really energy. And we have an incredible opportunity in this state in drilling for natural gas that would bring down the price of energy to the level that it would make this state take off and we could really get manufacturing back again. It's something that my opponent ironically campaigns on. She talks about how she'd love to see manufacturing and made in America again, yet everything she's doing is killing that prospect. And if we could just get drilling for natural gas, as has happened very safely in other states, I believe that that's what would completely revolutionize this economy. It would be a total game changer.
Well, on the topic of hydrofracking, Governor Cuomo and his administration have been deciding whether they should allow it. They've been doing a study, Cuomo and previous governors, for about 4 years now. Do you think he's dragging his feet on that?
You know, I don't think he is personally. I honestly believe he knows what's good for this state and he wants this economy to take off. The problem is, to some extent, he's all alone in his own party, and he's not getting any backup, he's not getting any support, and indeed, far from it, people are trying to tear him down and browbeat him, really, to throw the brakes on this and put up every obstacle they can, and I include my opponent in that. I mean, she worked for Governor Cuomo. He's a friend, an ally, someone she knows and admires, and if it were possible, she could be helping him in this to the good of all the people of New York. And not only is she sitting on the sidelines, she is saying things like, well, if it goes through at the state level, she's going to ask the EPA to do an independent review, sort of assuring her far-left celebrity environmentalist and lobbying friends that she'll find a way to put a stop to it. And I think that's not in the interests of New York.
Well, what about those environmental concerns? Do you think they're valid? Do you think people should be worried about the chemicals used in fracking, whether their drinking water is going to be harmed? I mean, is that something that should be considered?
Oh, of course it should be considered, but it has been studied very thoroughly. The president, you know, who is no lackadaisical person on environmental matters, the president thinks drilling for natural gas is a safe and viable option that we ought to be pursuing. His head of the EPA believes it can be done safely. I think they're both good authorities on the matter. But even beyond that, if you look at experience, you look at other states, you look at Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, North Dakota, it's actually, this isn't a hypothetical question, it's happening. And we aren't seeing that water supplies are being polluted. We're seeing, of course, minor incidents that you have in any human activity. You know, if you leave your car in the driveway and a gallon of antifreeze leaks out, you've got a spill on the ground. So there's some level of safety concern and vigilance that has to be maintained in any human activity. Drilling for natural gas is no different. But my point is it's been done very, very safely, especially relative to other activities that could produce that kind of an economic boom.
wanted to ask you about some healthcare-related issues. Medicare has been a big topic in the elections. I wanted to ask you about the Paul Ryan budget, since you're a conservative, as he is. And one of the iterations, he wanted to essentially privatize Medicare, give seniors vouchers to pay for Medicare. There's been a lot of criticism about that. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you support that?
I think his ideas have, he's a real intellect and a real idea person, and so he likes to toss ideas out there that then can be worked on and kind of chipped away at and molded, and I think that's what's happening with his Medicare proposal. I think as it has evolved, what it's evolved to now, sounds to me like the beginnings of an excellent proposal, and the reason why is this, Karen, that any good or service, I think, improves by virtue of competition, by having other plans out there, something to compete with. It brings up the quality and the choice and brings down the price of any good or service. So I think that's a very good way to go, to allow the option of traditional Medicare for those who prefer it, but then to offer some other choices. I mean, that's what's really missing in healthcare these days, and it's what, as a U.S. senator or even a Senate staffer, which I was, you go into the Senate and you're presented with this great menu of healthcare options to choose from in terms of health insurance. And I think every New Yorker and every American should have that range of options, not just federal employees.
But if you privatize some, doesn't it sort of undermine the whole public system? Isn't that like the beginning of the end for it?
I don't think so. I disagree completely. I think that it really would improve, the public option would be forced to improve in its quality. And to compete on a real basis with other plans. So I think it would actually improve the service and offerings all around.
You also have some issues with what's become widely known as Obamacare. One of these, maybe a smaller part of it, is a surcharge on companies that make medical devices. I know you've mentioned that in your campaign. That's something that you would like to change because it would affect upstate New York, correct?
Absolutely. My general outlook on things is I would want to advocate for New York and what's good for New York, not at the expense of America. But this is a case where the interests of New York and the interests of the country are perfectly aligned. And that is on this part of Obamacare that would impose an excise tax on the manufacturing of medical devices. New York is number four in the nation in that industry. It's a wonderful, booming industry here, produces fantastic, high-paying jobs. And I've talked to the manufacturers, and they say that if this Obamacare tax is not reversed, it's going to kill jobs. Either that or it's going to come out of their R&D budget. They can't pass along that excise tax in the form of increased prices to customers. So, and we've seen it happen at Welch Allyn Skinny Atlas. They've had a huge layoff recently, and they attributed it directly to this tax. And you know, I just think there's no reason for it. We have a wonderful industry. We should not be imposing taxes like this, especially in a slow economy, and especially on a wonderful, thriving industry like this. Elizabeth Warren, who's running in Massachusetts, another state that has a good medical device industry, is very much against this tax. But I have not been able to persuade my opponent, Senator Gillibrand, to come out against the tax, and it's really hurting New York.
Well, speaking of Massachusetts, I was wondering, the larger issue of Obamacare versus Romney Care, as in the states providing universal health coverage as opposed to the federal government. I mean, are you against what Governor Romney did in Massachusetts? Do you think there's flaws in that as well?
I didn't study the Romney Care proposal and implementation.
It's a lot the same as...
Right. No, I understand the broad outlines are the same. And I didn't study it in detail, so I can't speak to it, you know, exactly in every detail. In general, I think it's a state's prerogative to experiment with something like that. I think that's the beauty of the federal system. We'll see if it really ends up in the long run being better than what some other states could do. I hope that more states would be able to experiment, and there's a certain level of competition that goes on there. Besides the competition among insurers themselves that I would favor, I think there ought to be competition among states, and you can look and see if another state has a better idea, then other states could emulate it. So I don't think it's nearly the problem of Obamacare to do it at the state level. And if it works for Massachusetts, that's fine. Here's what I know. Obamacare is not going to work at the national level. Nationalizing one-sixth of our economy, telling people that they absolutely have to purchase a good or service is not constitutional. It's not part of Congress's power to do. And I think inserting this huge federal bureaucracy overseeing health care is absolutely the wrong way to go. It's not going to increase choice. People are already seeing their health care premiums going up. contrary to what the president promised, and so I think it's just going to be bad all around for the quality of American medicine and for price.
Now, you took a no new taxes pledge, correct? I'm wondering how that fits in with what's happening at the end of this year and next year with the so-called fiscal cliff and the sequestration, which essentially means that if the Bush-era tax cuts don't expire, there's going to be all kinds of slashes across the board in government spending. How would you handle that?
Well, I think what we need to do is the people in Washington need to start doing their job, and that's why we're in the mess that we're in. We hire, we elect, and pay our federal representatives, senators and members of Congress, to make smart decisions, rational decisions about the federal budget and how should we be spending precious taxpayer dollars. They have not been doing that for a long time. They've been abdicating their responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a larger question, too. Is this a good way to run government?
It's a horrible way to run government. And it's an increasing trend, Karen, where instead of holding accountable the people who've been elected to do their job, we outsource these jobs to blue ribbon commissions, you know, some of whom are unelected officials, or we set up these automatic machine-like sequestration budget-cutting axes. And all of this, to me, is a way of evading responsibility on the part of the legislators who are really accountable to the people. So I think it's a very unfortunate trend. With respect to increasing taxes and the fiscal cliff, I believe in the Ronald Reagan school of thought that you don't get rid of debts and deficits by raising taxes, particularly in a slow economy. And this is, by the way, something that John F. Kennedy said. It's something that Barack Obama said 2 years ago. He said, oh, we can't raise taxes in this environment in a recessionary economy. Those comments are all right, and what we're doing now is wrong. Raising taxes in this economy is wrong, and it will result in this fiscal cliff, particularly when these automatic spending cuts go into effect.
But at some point, the government needs revenue, right? I mean, you're not against all government,
no,
right?
Of course.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be running.
Of course. No, we need revenue is very important, and revenue at historical levels of spending, which is around 18 to 20% of our gross domestic product, I think is about the right level of federal spending. And we're spending way more than that. Under the current administration and Senator Gillibrand, we're pushing up to 25% of GDP. That's too much. And we've got $16 trillion of debt. We've gone from 10 to $16 trillion just in these few short years. Explosive growth in the level of debt that we've never seen before, and it's not sustainable. We just can't keep doing it. So we can't tax our way out of this debt and deficit. We need to do it by cutting spending, and not just by mindless across-the-board spending, but by intelligent spending and setting of priorities. And it's tough to do. Like in any budget, there's not endless resources, and you have to make really tough decisions. And we've seen an incredible unwillingness on the part of those in Washington to make those decisions.
Changing the subject to social issues, abortion. If you could just spell out, what is your position on abortion?
Couple things. My position, I'm pro-life. I believe that every single human being is equal to every other human being in their right to life. And I believe the unborn child, the disabled, the elderly, those who are paralyzed and can't talk, like my mother, who was tetraplegic for 5 years and even lost the ability to blink her eyes. I don't believe she was a vegetable. I believe she was a human being. And I believe that about every single human life, that it's entitled to respect in the law and that it's sacred. So I'm pro-life.
Yes.
I do believe that the Constitution doesn't mention the word abortion, and that when the Constitution is silent on something, it's up to individual states to decide their policies. And some states, like New York, want to have very liberal abortion laws. And that's the responsibility of state legislators who are accountable to the people in that state. And I believe that constitutionally, there's no basis on which to change that.
And you're okay with that, New York having an abortion law that you might not personally agree with?
Of course I disagree with it, but I believe that it's the prerogative of New Yorkers under the Constitution to have those laws.
And would you have exceptions for life of the mother, health of the mother, cases of rape? Is that something that you support?
The life of the mother exception is something that I support.
But not in cases of rape?
Correct.
You also said Roe v. Wade was, I think, a horrible or a terrible decision. I think you've somewhat explained that, but you think that it should be left up to each state, and that's why it's
exactly
a bad decision.
I mean, it's what I just said. You know, abortion is not a matter. The Constitution was the genius of the Constitution was to set up a very limited federal government, very limited powers, and things that weren't explicitly delegated to the federal government are reserved to the people or to the states to decide for themselves. Abortion's one of those issues. It's just not in the Constitution, and therefore it's up to the people to decide what policy they want. It can't be imposed upon everyone and invented by the Supreme Court.
Contraception has become an issue in the election, and whether employers should be required to pay for it for their workers. What do you think of that?
I'm glad you phrased it that way, Karen. You're a good, objective journalist, because that really is the issue. No one is trying to take away anybody's contraception. It's just a completely phony issue to characterize it that way. The only issue here is whether employers, including religiously affiliated institutions, who may have religious objections to providing these abortion, contraception, and sterilization services, whether they can be forced, contrary to their faith and their First Amendment rights, to include these services in their health plans. Doesn't say anything about whether it's mm-hmm. not in trying to intrude on anyone's
it's
life
matter.
And say whether they can
a matter of paying for it.
It's a matter of paying for it and including it as a formal part of a plan that you offer as an employer when it's contrary to your faith. That's really all that's about. And so I think it's really been mischaracterized to the point where my opponent says things like, well, if only we had Congress 51% filled with women, I wouldn't have to spend all my time talking about contraception. Then I could talk about the economy and jobs. And I say to that, you know what? You need to talk about the economy and jobs, because nobody's taking anyone's contraception away. And that is an excuse for you not dealing with the real issues before us in this election.
We have had that requirement in New York State for about 10 years. It was done under Republican Governor George Pataki. And there hasn't been that much controversy once
exactly.
it happened.
And it's very unfortunate. And you know what that goes to prove? That even though something's happening at a low level, you know, when people say, oh, this is terrible, but they say, well, we'll just try to live with it and keep going. You can't let that happen, because then it establishes a principle that once it blows up to a much bigger level and is very problematic, people say, oh, well, you've been doing this for 10 years. The church institutions have been doing it formally under protest. They did object. But it just didn't raise to a big level in the public consciousness over the last 10 years.
And we should mention that as of this taping, we've asked Senator Gillibrand to come on the show as well, and her campaign has not responded.
Oh, I wish we could have been here together.
Before that, I know, that would have been exciting. So before we close, in the final days of the campaign, what are you planning on doing? How are you getting your message out? What are your plans?
A few things. One, I am running out around the state and wearing out shoe after shoe, just tearing up the pavement. So I'm doing a grassroots campaign. I have thousands of volunteers that in these last 2 weeks are now fanning out across the state, doing phone calls, knocking on doors, all that sort of thing. Just a real grassroots effort. I'm traveling myself, speaking before groups, doing as many interviews as I can. And there are some independent groups who are spending money that I don't have on TV ads.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Karen.